Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report with me, John Adirola. And we have a special treat for you. Joining me for the first time on The Damage Report, contributor to The Breakdown, Conscious Lee. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. I know you've been you've been contributing to Rebel HQ originally, now The Breakdown, and appearing on other shows on the network. For people who might not be familiar with you and your work, would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah. Education is elevation. My name is Conscious Lee. Anytime you hear me, anytime you see my voice, or anytime you hear my voice and see my face, just know I'm gonna be delivering top level theory, philosophy type thing. You feel me? No ACT, no SAT. You'll be able to get you like a high level college theory thing that's, you know, being able to infuse research, academics, you know, studies. Well, whatever we're talking about within society, may it be politics or, you know, a social issue or something that a random celebrity did.
Okay, well, actually, we've got a mix maybe of several of those things. And it's been a while since I've been in college, so I could use the refresher in the academic approach. So I look forward to seeing that from you. So thank you for joining us. And everyone out there in the audience, thank you as well. Very glad to have you here. We've got a lot to talk about, including there is apparently some section of the GOP who would prefer to not have anti-Semitism take over the whole party. So we're gonna hear from them, take a look at the partisan tilt that seems to be developing on Twitter, as well as Elon Musk starting a fight with Apple of all things. We've got police brutality, we've got the big lie, and in the aftermath, we're gonna be joined by a reporter from Media Matters to talk about what the hell is going on with Tucker Carlson. And so there's all that and more. It's gonna be a lot of fun. Please hit the like button if you haven't already, so that people know we're live. And if you wanna reach out to us with any comments, tweets, super chats, anything like that, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Conscious, are you ready to start the show?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, let's do that thing. Coming out of his anti-Semitic Thanksgiving dinner, Donald Trump sort of distanced himself from Kanye West, kind of condemned him a little bit, although he implied that nothing anti-Semitic happened at that actual dinner. But you might have noticed that even in those attempts to distance himself from Kanye, he didn't have much to say about Nick Fuentes, the possibly even more outspoken anti-Semite, racist, homophobe, and misogynist. And it turns out that was not an oversight, that was by design. People in his orbit are saying he's scared to criticize this weirdo troll. He's apparently repeatedly refused to disavow Nick Fuentes after they spoke at Mar-a-Lago. His advisors had been telling him that he needed to do that, but he's afraid that he might alienate a section of his base. Which, I mean, that says a lot, really, because this guy, Nick Fuentes, is considered fringe by other weirdo radicals. Donald Trump takes a look at that and says, that's my base. I'm not saying anti-Semites and misogynists are his base. He's saying that that's his base. Bear that in mind. He ultimately made clear to his team that he fundamentally did not want to criticize Fuentes, a product of his dislike of confrontation, we'll return to that in just a second, and his anxiety that it might antagonize a devoted part of his base. And he became more entrenched in his obstinance the more he was urged to do so. That last sentence, I buy. I don't buy that he knows what most of those words mean, but I buy that he would do that. I love, though, that they try to claim that part of why he didn't want to condemn him was his dislike of confrontation. What are you talking about? He loves attacking people. He loves smearing people. That's his favorite thing to do. Just not when it's an outspoken anti-Semite, where doing that criticism would potentially make other racists and anti-Semites have a problem with him. So it's a weird approach, Conscious. What do you think?
Conservative contradictions that we always see, you know, textbook. On one end, you was able to literally embolden your base by being confrontational. And now you have selective moral outrage to say you don't like confrontation. Now it's giving real, real slick, like I don't want to piss off particular individuals because I might need the affirmation later on.
Yeah, and bear in mind that it's been a little bit since Donald Trump was embroiled in a massive anti-Semitism scandal. He's had little ones because every couple of months he tells Jewish Americans that they don't respect and love Israel enough, which is super weird. But back in the day, you might recall that when he was endorsed by David Duke, he was like, I don't know David Duke. I don't know who he is. Who am I to condemn him? And you know, when the Nazis were marching and Heather Hare ended up getting killed by one of them, you know, there's fine people on both sides. So that was like half a decade ago at this point. And you might think that gearing up for his second presidential run, he might have learned something or maybe evolved a little bit, but it's pretty much the same strategy as before. It's I don't wanna make the crazies hate me, you know. To the Proud Boys, I guess, stand back and stand by or whatever. As much as everyone on that side seems to think of him as some sort of alpha strongman, he is always held in the grip of his base, terrified that he might turn them off. I don't know, now with DeSantis as a potential opponent, this might actually really hurt him, because DeSantis is gonna try to present himself as more reasonable. And Donald Trump seems to be playing right into that strategy. What do you think?
Yeah, he definitely playing into the strategy. We got a lot of divisiveness and disavowing of the quote unquote unity that we saw the red wave was able to carry the past 2 or 3 years. I think that Trump and the way that he's kind of dealing with a lot of the newer issues, it shows, you know, again, the term I love to use, conservative contradictions. On one end, people that love Trump, they say, hey, the reason why we love Trump is because he don't take nothing from nobody. It's because he's unapologetic and because he always does what's on his minds and he does what he feels and he doesn't care about the consequences. But on one other end, every time it comes to disavowing white supremacists or doing something with anti-Semites, he does care about what the white supremacists or the anti-Semites feel. And to me, that right there is the pure illustration of you say one thing and you literally do the opposite of what you said you're gonna do.
Yeah.
What you say you do.
Yeah, the first part is just branding at that point. It's him wanting to seem strong, wanting to seem alpha, but that's not actually how he's acting. Yeah, he's getting criticism from a lot of different sides, coming from inside of other parts of the Republican base, including parts of the base that are very important for his presidential aspirations. He's being attacked by religious conservatives of all stripes. Let's turn now to that. In the wake of the whole anti-Semitism dinner, conservative Jewish individuals and groups are lashing out at Donald Trump. Morton Klein is the head of the right-wing Zionist Organization of America. Said, I am a child of survivors. I've become frightened, very frightened for my people. Donald Trump is not an anti-Semite. He loves Israel. He loves Jews, but he mainstreams, he legitimizes Jew hatred and Jew haters. And this scares me. I think he's part right there. Jonathan Greenblatt, chief executive of the Anti-Defamation League, says the normalization of anti-Semitism is here. And you've got a rabbi from the Orthodox Union saying the level of anti-Semitism being expressed, anti-Semitic attack acts at a very elevated level, and the acceptability of anti-Semitism, it is all creating an environment which is, thank God, unusual for the United States, and it has to be nipped in the bud. That's it. That's the moment we're in. I mean, even Ben Shapiro tweeted in a somewhat vague way, a good way not to accidentally dine with a vile racist and anti-Semite you don't know is not to dine with a vile racist and anti-Semite you do know. Again, like it's the closest he'll come to strength. He couldn't even say Trump's name in that. But a lot of conservative Jewish people and organizations not happy with what Trump's been up to. Conscious?
I think that there are just a lot of inconsistencies in what's going on right now. To me, the first thing that I think about outside of the anti-Semitism is the ways in which our community and the ways in which our society loves to weaponize like pedophilia and caring for kids. Nick Fuentes and the other dude that took place at the dinner, both of them have a history of child pedophilia, have a history of literally perpetuating sexual violence towards kids. Right now, we see that Balenciaga and Kanye West and everybody in this camp is trying to talk about and have selective moral outrage about the kids when it comes to having on, you feel me, harnesses. But when it comes to having dinner with a not only anti-Semite, somebody that has literally advocated for, you know, pedophilia amongst kids. To me, it just shows the selective outrage, and it show you also how like our society as a whole, whether you left or the right or in the middle, we all really just, you know, going to hell in a handbasket. Maybe on a scholarship, hell on scholarship. You know, that's what we all implicated at this point.
You know, Kashi, you're totally right, because like also, again, I'm not saying that I think that Trump is like trying to sleep with children or whatever. But like, you know, he has multiple times in TV talked about how attractive he thinks kids are. Like that's his, including kids in his own family, his kids. I didn't make him say that stuff. And that's not to say that he's acting on this, but it seems weird that if your movement is gonna be about constantly being afraid of child predators, you turn a blind eye to that, or him wishing Ghislaine Maxwell well, or you know, maybe tomorrow on the show, I was looking at some transcripts of Tucker Carlson back on the old days when he was on Bubba the Love Sponge, constantly minimizing pedophilia. And Tucker Carlson now super worried about it constantly. So maybe it's time to remind them of where their heroes actually have been on this topic in the past. In any event, I want to turn to another person who's criticizing him. Even Mike Pence finally seems comfortable criticizing Trump a little bit, just a little bit. Take a look at this.
President Trump was wrong to give a white nationalist, an anti-Semite and a Holocaust denier a seat at the table. And I think he should apologize for it. And he should denounce those individuals and their hateful rhetoric.
So that sounds strong, denouncing Trump for having dinner with the anti-Semites. But even now with Mike Pence able to identify that this is a thing that Trump never should have done, even though Mike Pence himself has been on the receiving end of Trump's radical thoughts and actions and all of that, he still has to backtrack. So that little bit, which is denouncing Trump, is immediately followed by this.
With that being said, as I point out in the book as well, I don't believe Donald Trump is an anti-Semite. I don't believe he's a racist or a bigot. I would not have been his vice president if he was. And you know, people often forget the president's daughter converted to Judaism.
Yep.
His son-in-law is a devout Jew. His grandchildren are Jewish.
Conscious, what do you think about that?
Hey, the thing that really like grinds my gears, pisses me off about the inconsistencies with that, I got a lot of family members and homeboys that's locked up because the judge said they were an accessory to crime, which means that the judge said that you were just as guilty for committing the crime because you did not intervene when that crime was being committed. You see what I'm saying? There are a lot of people within hip hop that are always already demonized because they are a proximity to crime and how they are literally coupling up with people and going, you feel me, being in company with people that are up to bad. I find that real weird, you feel me, when we start talking about white conservatives and how they are cuddling up with white supremacist anti-Semites. You see what I'm saying? And as a professor, you feel me, in my state of Texas, the conservatives felt like they wanted to eliminate me. If they felt like I was in proximity to a drug dealer or in proximity to a murderer or a killer or in proximity to, you feel me, a misogynist, or if I was in proximity to an anti-Semite, there would be all the reasons to call into question my legitimacy and my credibility. But when Trump get the sharing cupcakes, you feel me, and drinks with anti-Semites, it don't mean nothing.
Yeah, what do we think they'd be saying if Biden had dinner with them? Well, I know what I would be saying if Biden had dinner with them. I'd be condemning him, because that you're totally right. Like, you are responsible. You don't have to let them into your home. You can lock the door if you want. I'm sure there's a lock on the door. But even there's the accessory thing. Definitely, you're 100% right. But also, like Mike Pence's argument for how Trump has a get out of being an anti-Semite card free. Does he not understand bigotry and how it works? Oh, he cannot be an anti-Semite because his daughter converted to Judaism? What was it, up to Trump? Did he have to turn both keys at the same time? And by the way, having anti-Semitic views doesn't mean that every time you see a Jewish person, froth boils out of your mouth. You can just believe really horrid stereotypes. You can act and speak in ways that injure individuals or the group. That's definitely true. Mike Pence apparently would believe that slave masters who raped their slaves couldn't be racist because they were sexually attracted to them. They're like, it's complicated, hatred and bigotry, but he doesn't seem to understand that. If you associate with a group, well, clearly you can't harbor any hatred in your heart. That's what I'm getting off of Mike Pence.
Facts. I'm getting the same thing. I'm getting the same thing. Not only am I getting the same thing, I go a little step further and say that Mike Pence and a lot of individuals that's chiming in on the anti-Semitic conversation, they are racially illiterate. That means their ability to read and write situations pertaining to race is so lacking that it's causing racial violence. In many different instances, when we start talking about individuals being, you know, anti-Semitic, I look at it as the same when we start talking about white supremacists. People don't recognize that you don't have to have on a white hood and burn crosses, you feel me, in a front yard to be implicated within white supremacy or to perpetuate and push white supremacy. So when we start thinking about anti-Semitism, listen, if you believe in conspiracy theories about, you know, Jewish economic control, that's anti-Semitic. If you believe that Jewish people are, you feel me, having these puppet-like, you know, control over, you know, the entertainment industry, that these are all sentiments that come from Hitler and his kinfolks.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And look, honestly, I don't know if you know it or not, but if you're participating in the QAnon thing, that's just the blood libel against Jewish people. The belief that there's an international group of elites and all of them are secretly trying to suck the hormones out of the blood of children, that's just anti-Semitism with some of the numbers filed off. And then often they're put back on because those people want the actual explicit anti-Semitism too. So anyway, Mike Pence also, like, Mike Pence has always seemed less crazy than Trump by standing next to Mike Pence. But Mike Pence is a hard right winger himself. Let's not forget that. But there's one other part of this that we have to at least briefly talk about, and it's what happened yesterday. Let's jump right in this video and you'll get an idea of what I'm talking about.
Been extremely unfair to you, I think.
Who is they, though? We can't say who they is, can we?
Press. I'm not using I don't use the word as the way I guess you guys use. I'm talking about
it is
about
them, though, isn't it? I mean, because no. because when you think about it, consider it. In 2018.
What do you mean it's not? What do I mean? Like, okay, so how about. Are you leaving?
Are you afraid of the press?
He's gone. I'll say it right now. You guys want to bring that stuff up?
And then have think the we're discussion.
Not going to have a conversation?
Like, have the discussion.
Like you think Ye's going to come in here and say, here's my pain, here's my suffering. I'm going to say, I hear you. And then he's going to say, and it was Jewish people. And I'm going to be like, okay, but don't you consider. So I'm not going to do this. I refuse.
Okay, so that is an excerpt from yesterday's edition of the Tim Pool Show. It's a show hosted by a beanie permanently attached to a right-wing grifter. Anyway, he decided to have Kanye West and Nick Fuentes on to get views, honestly. Like, I don't know if there's any more mission than that. Bring on the people that are notable for saying insane things. Act like surprised when they begin to say insane anti-Semitic things. And then you get to look reasonable by comparison because Kanye West stormed off of the set. Tim Pool gets to look like the guy who is pushing back at least mildly against anti-Semitism. And the thing about this that bothers me so much, I don't care so much about the Nick Fuentes part with Tim Pool or whatever. It's that Tim Pool just last week spent multiple days on social media as explicitly as you can imagine, blaming those who had been killed in the Club Q shooting for their own death, saying that these are groomers who are trying to groom kids. What do you expect? People are going to kill you. Day after day after day, tweet after tweet after tweet. That's what he did. But now we're not going to remember that because he looks reasonable in comparison to Nick Fuentes, I guess. He was openly calling for the murder of LGBTQ people a week ago, but I guess now he's the reasonable voice in the room. So that bothers me, Conscious. But what do you think about Kanye West and Nick Fuentes' appearance on the show?
It did show that we're living in weird, insidious times. Not only what you just said, how, you know, Tim gets to look like he has a good moral compass now. That's his name, Tim, huh? Yeah, Tim. Tim Pool. He gets to look like he has a good moral compass on Wednesday, even though on Tuesday and Monday he was advocating for, you know, dehumanizing and death of people. You see what I'm saying? So yeah. To me, being so insidious is that our society, in many instances, I feel like nuance be kicking people's butt. You know what I'm saying? We don't recognize two things can be true at the same time. So in acknowledging that what Tim was saying on Wednesday or saying the other day was wild about the LGBT community, in acknowledging the little line that he was able to draw with Kanye was kind of smooth and cool. But to me, it kind of shows that he's willingly ignorant in many different instances, because he shows that he has a moral compass when it comes to the Jewish identity. I don't know why he doesn't have that same energy when it comes to people of the LGBTQ identities.
Yeah, that's a great question. I honestly don't know. Anyway, finally, as he was storming out, Kanye West apparently told Pool's co-host that the pair, quote, don't believe in my truths as he was leaving the studio. Okay. Wait, when is he gonna stop?
What?
Stop coming up with these conspiracy theories about people harming your reputation when you're the one constantly harming your, like, I know he wants to believe that there is this network of Jewish people that are stopping him from having any success or whatever. But does he not get, like, yes, I'm sure there's plenty of Jewish people that now don't want to work with him as a result of what he said. You know who else doesn't want to? Lots of other people. I'm not Jewish. I'm an atheist, okay? Formerly some vague form of Christian. I can see that he's a bigot. I wouldn't want to work with him. Why would other reasonable people of whatever faith want to work with him, Conscious, when he keeps doing this stuff?
Hey, I really think this is how Kanye be. You feel me? It's a meme, right? The meme show you the angle. Right here, it show Kanye like, why y'all got y'all foot on my neck? Why you got your foot on my head? And then you turn and you see that it's all, this is really Kanye doing this to himself. But to me, it just showed that you lack accountability and responsibility when it comes to taking, you feel me, like claiming and really just hold on to what you just did. To me, it's like throwing rocks from a glass house and then hiding your hand when people come for you. It's like, yeah, nah, fam. You are self-sabotaging, and then you are outwardly blaming your self-sabotage on other people.
Yeah, 100%. Well, we have to take our first break. We're gonna respond to some of your comments. When we come back, we're gonna be talking about a bunch of other stuff, including Elon Musk going to war with Tim Apple. And that'll be fun. We'll have that for you after this.
Is it a delay on y'all side for me?
We might have some sort of remaining, I apologize, I got something stuck in my beard. Anyway, we might have some remaining sync problems, but we're gonna, you know, it's YouTube, what do you want? Unfortunately, nothing has fully recovered tech-wise from the pandemic.
It's on my end. I'm trying to make sure all my windows are closed, that I don't need open.
Well, we're just gonna push through, because unfortunately the news never ends. So we'll see what happens. Why don't we jump into our? No worries. Why don't we jump into our next topic? There's definitely a long lag before stuff shows up on my preview screen, unfortunately. Anyway, it's impossible to say at this point long term what effect all of what Elon Musk has already done to Twitter and all of the insane things that right wing grifters will encourage him to do in the near future, what effect it'll have on the platform. But we can take a look at what's already changing. So for instance, there does seem to be a little bit of a mixing up of the partisan tilt of Twitter. If you take a look at this chart, which is put together by the Washington Post from data made available elsewhere. If you take a look at over time, the change in followers for some Democratic high profile politicians and some Republican high profile politicians, you'll see that since Elon Musk bought Twitter back on October 28th, Marjorie Greene has gained like 350,000 new followers. Others like Jim Jordan have gotten some as well, nearly as many. And then you take a look at people like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, each losing more than 100,000. Now, the effect is magnified for these most high profile politicians, but they found that there was an effect like this when you take a look at many politicians on each side of the aisle. And there's a lot of potential explanations for this. It might be that some people on the right who hadn't been interested in Twitter have now been encouraged to think that anything will go, and so they're signing up. And maybe some leftists or even Democratic centrists are thinking, well, I keep being told this is going to be hell, and admittedly, I've been saying that, so I guess I'll just sign off. But whatever the explanation is, and Conscious, maybe you have other ideas, we are definitely seeing that it is shifting towards more conservatives flooding into the service and some on the other side of the aisle leaving it. What do you think?
I would agree with you. The only thing I would add to it is I think a lot of conservatives that's hopping on Twitter right now for the first time gonna be in for a rude awakening when they come into contact with Black Twitter and they get the, you know, what I'm saying, throwing all their racial illiteracy and throwing their entitlement around and throwing the N-word around and all that. You know, it was a 500% increase of the N-word when, you know, Elon Musk bought it and ushered in his idea of free speech. So right now we see a lot of folks feel like, you know, freedom of speech means freedom of consequence. But ooh-wee, Black Twitter has something else to show you.
So at this point, you don't think that Black Twitter is going to be going to one of these other platforms people are talking about, like Post or Mastodon or anything like that? You think they're going to stick around?
Nah, yeah, I think a lot of individuals, a lot of content creators that's a part of Black Twitter is gonna be there to stay. You feel me? I think I feel like a lot of us recognize we live in an anti-Black world that's also structured with a little white supremacy. So I think when you recognize that is the world we live in, you really try to carve out your social life within social depth. You feel me? It's like, listen, man, as a content creator that love talking about white supremacy and anti-Blackness and things like that, I'm gonna get hit on the community guidelines regardless of what platform I'm on. So I'm a rock and roll on Twitter, I'm a rock and roll on TikTok, I'm a rock and roll on YouTube. And that's how a lot of Black people feel. You feel me? Like,
yeah. I only have to fact check one thing. According to our viewers, it's called Tiki Talky now. So, you know.
Hey, my bad. Hey, the clock app, Tiki Talky, you know what I'm saying? We know they be stealing data and doing things. But listen, we know that a lot of these apps be doing, you feel me, shady business with our data. You know what I'm saying? We gotta just, you know.
Yeah, the important thing, I guess, is to make sure that you have a presence on multiple things just in case. But yeah, it doesn't look like there's been a massive exodus yet. But I can already say that my experience is not as positive as it was previously. I would say the single largest contributor to that was the launch of Twitter Blue Verified, which was most distinctive for having no verification whatsoever, which is weird. Why would they call it that? So for $8, you could just get a picture of a blue checkmark put next to your account and feel free to spread misinformation and launch targeted harassment campaigns with the sheen of respectability and authority. So that was a great idea. We also don't know the long-term impacts of him firing over half of the company and then driving a significant chunk of the remaining employees out. Also politically, the right believes, and some in the center, just publish whatever Elon Musk said. Isn't it weird that they assume that everything that this billionaire says publicly is the truth? Like, why are they extending goodwill to a person who has so regularly lied openly about products and services and his company, clearly trying to manipulate stock prices in public? It's weird that everybody just assumes he's always telling the truth. But anyway, one of the most recent claims he's making is that he's some kind of political moderate, even though he is, as I say this, responding to a right-wing grifter on Twitter. I'm sure, go check. He also, by the way, literally told people to vote for Republicans in the midterm elections, which I've never seen the CEO of a social media company do before. He's already saying he's gonna support Ron DeSantis in the 2024 election. So again, the right would love to say that they just want an even playing field. They just want free speech. No, they want what they're getting, which is a platform which is increasingly tilted towards benefiting and advantaging their side of the aisle, while many leftist and anti-fascist Twitter accounts are being banned on a regular basis. So yeah, the tilt is pretty clear, Conscious. You have any other thoughts about the direction of Twitter?
Hey, I seen this funny thing I think it was Twitter actually. They called and referred to Elon Musk as Phony Stark. I thought that was pretty funny, you know what I'm saying? Just because, you know, a lot of people don't recognize. I feel like Elon Musk is a very paraded, you know, accountant, and we don't recognize that he ain't really created nothing. He just know how to like take over a company and fund it, you know what I mean? So when it comes to him running Twitter into the ground, I think it's gonna be able to show a lot of individuals that just because you have economic authority, it don't mean you have intellectual authority. And just because you have a knack for being able to generate profit, it don't mean you're smart.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I would argue that it's been a lot of dumb throughout history that's been able to show that they have a mastery for being able to generate profit, but they have a horrible understanding of humanity, a horrible understanding of human relations, horrible understanding of how literally the world works outside of the little bubble they made for themselves. And Elon Musk is showing us that.
Yeah. And I have not seen much evidence throughout my life or in what I've seen from history that becoming incredibly wealthy and powerful naturally leads you to be an ethical or moral person.
Like we stay in the hood, man. It's because you make money, don't make you real. It's because you got money, don't make you real. I think that that is a paradigm that understands that goes on in lower socioeconomic communities that I feel like we can apply in every instance.
Yeah.
It's because you got money, don't make you a moralistic person.
Yeah. Yeah. And we could have a version of that. Just because you were born into the great wealth of your parents from gem mines in South Africa doesn't mean you're a moralistic person. Okay, well, brace yourself. He's fighting with Apple. God only knows what effect that'll have. With that said, I want to turn briefly to more positive news. So let's move to our C block a little bit early. At some point later today, we are actually expecting the Senate to vote on a same-sex marriage bill. They have already broken an attempted filibuster. I shouldn't even mention that. Literally everything in the Senate is automatically filibustered. But in this case, 12 Republicans actually sided with Democrats for the Respect for Marriage Act, which is going to protect both same-sex and interracial marriages. It's expected to pass at some point later on today. And Senator Tammy Baldwin, a Democrat of Wisconsin, who wrote the bill, revised it recently to get those GOP votes by adding language clarifying that religious organizations will not be required to perform same-sex marriages and making clear that the federal government isn't required to protect polygamous marriages, because these are supposedly things that the Republicans had issues with it. It also, by the way, does not require states to perform these marriages, just to recognize marriages that have already happened. So it is something. It's the most federal recognition of these unions, and it has received much more support from Republicans than past attempts. But it only goes so far. It ain't that strong, really. But Conscious, what do you think?
I think that it's exposing the doublespeak that our Constitution has about life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and the separation of church and state. I think that the caveat in that policy, just being able to acknowledge what religious people have to do or not have to do, to me, it shows that there is a lot of hypocrisy when it comes to the separation of church and state, and a lot of so-called constitutionalists trying to uphold the values of the Constitution. I think that the idea of federalists being the distinction between state and federal government, and making it where states don't have to recognize unions that are people practicing their life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, to me, it just seems like unconstitutional and unpatriotic. You see what I'm saying? And it's like, all lives matter. Does that not extend to marriage and love when it comes to people of the LGBT community, specifically gay individuals? Yeah. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. I just want to focus on one more comment from someone, a Republican, who is supporting this bill. So that's a good sign. They supported the bill. But Mitt Romney had this to say. Mitt is actually supporting him. While I believe in traditional marriage, a Obergefell passed court decision, which helped to legalize it, is and has been the law of the land upon which LGBTQ individuals have relied. And I don't know if I'm being petty or pedantic or whatever, but can you stop talking about traditional marriage, honestly? Like, especially if you have decided that you're going to catch up to modernity and be okay with the marriages. If you already made that leap, can you stop talking about traditional marriage when all you mean is straight marriages? You don't mean traditional marriage, because we really want to talk about what marriages have traditionally been like, sort of the social and legal context of those marriages. It had a lot more than just two straight people marrying that was wrapped up in that. And so continuing this absolute BS term that is just used to exclude when you've already decided that you're going to vote inclusively, just shed that, kill that last part, and just catch up to where the rest of us are. I know, again, I'm probably being petty, Conscious. I apologize. I'm just sick of hearing that term.
hey, this is your fault. You the one started us being petty. So since we being petty, I would say that Mitt, you feel me, committed a Christian supremacist dog whistle. And what him and Ted Cruz love to do have embedded backtracking when they know they might have pissed their base off and they got to kiss the ring. You see what I'm saying? I got a video today that's dropping on the breakdown about how Ted Cruz kissed the ring. And we see, I feel like Mitt Romney right there, I think that's what he was doing. He recognized that what he was saying was too much in the step of the right direction.
Yeah.
Right off his base. So he wanted to evoke the traditional values while being able to say that we should also account for this type of marriage. You see how he did that?
Mm-hmm. I like that. Everybody definitely, if you aren't already subscribed to The Breakdown, head over there so you'll see Conscious video, past videos are already up there. There's a number of great contributors. With that said, we are going to take our last break of the hour. When we come back, we got to jump into the continued effort to overturn elections everywhere people can, as well as a horrendous act of police brutality. So we'll have that and more for you after this. Okay, everybody, time, she is a-wasting. Let's dive into a few more topics with the minutes we have remaining. Although Arizona's elections did not go the way Donald Trump or the MAGA movement would want, and they're not going to be overturned, let's be very clear about that. He has been clear that he is still very much in hissy fit mode when it comes to them. He's been bleeding things like, this is a must watch, our elections are rigged, mail-in ballots are a total scam. How about all those broken Republican voting machines? Get smart, Republicans. By the way, he then clarified his view on mail-in ballots, saying, in all caps, mind you, remember, you can never have fair and free elections with mail-in ballots. Never, 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 won't and can't happen. Which might be true, but to be fair, it didn't stop him from voting in the 2020 election via mail-in ballot, as he very often does historically. It's very much a mail-in ballots for me, but not for thee thing. Oh, by the way, it's not just that he voted by mail-in ballot in Florida. He's saying you can't have fair elections if you have mail-in ballots, which Florida has. So I guess all those elections were rigged. I guess Ron DeSantis really didn't win. Go Charlie Crist. But anyway, while he cannot change the results of the Arizona elections, others are trying to. And in fact, Republican officials in a rural Arizona county earlier this week refused to actually certify the midterm results. There is no evidence of fraud or anything amiss. They're just refusing to do it. And right now, there's legal pressure being put on them to do their jobs or face some sort of legal consequences. But this, to me, Conscious, isn't just these people using their authority to maybe mess with the results of a couple of elections, which if this doesn't get certified could happen. But it's a preview of what could happen in 2024 as they take over more and more of these county election boards. What could they potentially do in the presidential election? What do you think?
I think they've already laid the groundwork for kind of a double bind. Like if they win, of course they're gonna be happy. If they don't win, they've already laid the groundwork to be able to, I feel like, stew a whole bunch of skepticism on the political process when it comes to, you know, having a Democratic election. The other thing I'm thinking of too is, you know, research over me search. Shout out to all the people and all the countries in Latin America that have been invaded by American forces for doing exactly what Republicans is trying to do with all these holding up in elections. You feel me? Like literally we have invaded international countries based off of their inability to have a Democratic process. Whew, man, it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Now they're totally cool with it. And even in a way that's pretty self-destructive. Like, you know, Trump told people, Republicans in 2020, not to vote by mail. And he did the same in 2022. But even Carrie Lake, who loves him, was like, yeah, but I want people to vote for me. So she was encouraging them to vote by mail before the election. And now he's once again telling them not to do it. Like, you doofus, you guys just ruined your red wave. Why are you still encouraging people not to vote? It's a terrible strategy in what remains of this democracy. generally you want to encourage people to vote by the easiest way possible. He can't seem to understand that though.
Yeah, that's why a lot of Gen Z vote too. I think that their lack of political awareness in the current climate, I think it's going to keep on hitting them in the polls. So when you literally cut off alternatives to individuals to be able to have their voice heard, you got to think about what demographics are being most impacted. Mm-hmm. So if I have an immune compromised system, or I want to be, you feel me, mindful of going to the polls and not spreading any things, I might want to send me in a ballot. So it's thinking about how many individuals across different, you know, religious beliefs and across different age spectrums was like literally trying to put in a mail-in ballot, and then you have been actively railroading against it.
Yeah,
so it'll impact you in the polls.
It's so bizarre. I understand that, and it doesn't seem to be working for them. Well, I will also say there is a legal effort to force them to certify the vote. We're gonna see. They're getting pressure from the new governor, Katie Hobbs. So we're gonna see. Anyway, for now though, we do have one more story to talk about with what remains of this hour. So everyone prepare yourself for this. 5 police officers in Connecticut are being charged after a black man was paralyzed in a police van. And for you to understand how brutal this is and how much merit there is to this lawsuit, we have to show you what actually happened. But you need to understand in advance that this is a horrible video we're gonna show you of a person being injured brutally for the rest of their life because of the negligence of cops. So consider yourself warned, but here's the footage.
What happened? What? You fell. What happened? Can you move at all?
I can't move.
Well, how your leg is all the way up there?
Understand me, listen, brother.
All right, I can't move you, so I have to hold on. I'm gonna have to go get an ambulance.
Listen, no.
Huh?
Yes, but understand.
I understand. Go ahead.
I fall. I cannot move my arms.
All right, do not move. I can see moving your arm.
No.
Okay.
Look at my hand.
Hold on.
Help.
Ready?
Huh? You're cracking. You just drink too much.
No,
you drink too much.
Okay.
Sit up.
Footage shows Randy Cox, 36-year-old, becoming paralyzed because of what the cops did. Absolutely brutal. It was back on June 19th. He was being driven to a New Haven police station. The cops say that they had to brake hard because they were avoiding a collision, which is an explanation perhaps of the braking, maybe. Not an explanation of why Randy Cox wasn't wearing a seatbelt when he was put in. And when you combine that with the fact that they have his hands bound behind his back, there was nothing he could do to stop himself from becoming paralyzed in that way. And then having condescending cops smugly telling him, I see your arm moving, or you're just faking it. You just drank too much. This person's entire life has been changed fundamentally, the rest of his life. And in the exact way that we've seen so many times, people being thrown around in the back of these police vans. And I can't say that in Connecticut, they use it in the same way that they seem to in places like Baltimore, where it's just a standard tool in their tool chests to brutalize people, but they clearly didn't care in advance of the injury and afterward. With that cop saying, I have to call an ambulance. No, you see someone injured, you go call the ambulance. You don't talk about it as if it's some sort of inconvenience for you. The inconvenience is being paralyzed for the rest of your life, potentially dying from the injury that you sustained, your entire life being thrown into utter chaos. That's the inconvenience, not having to dial 911. Anyway, I know that it's brutal footage, but Conscious, what did you think about that?
I just seen it as the complete disregard for the law. I feel like he was already being treated like a criminal. It wasn't innocent to proven guilty. I don't think he was able to see, you feel me, a judge or a jury or anything like that. And I know that when it comes to the dialogue in the media, a lot of his injuries are going to be justified because he was quote unquote a criminal that was doing something wrong. So again, I think about the constitutionalists that love to say back the blue, respect the blue and all that there. But when it comes to the regard for the law and how individuals are supposed to see the due process of law, we see you don't have that energy. And the last thing I'll say, listen, if a black mother or a mother of color, or really even if a white mother was to put their child in the backseat and their child was injured, that mother could see charges not only about negligence, but also, you feel me, that's gonna call into question their parenting. So the fact that law enforcement can be negligent and literally just disregard somebody's due process and treat them like a criminal and be like, ah, you a nuisance, now I gotta call, I gotta waste tax dollars on you. Yep. That show you in the immediate instance the orientation that individuals like that gentleman in that car, the communities that he comes from, they relationship to policing, in police.
Yeah. Just the sort of video just makes you just feel sick. Like sometimes, you know, we have periods where the news is more positive, and then sometimes you just see something that reminds you of how terrible some individuals and some organizations are. Well, thankfully, in this case, there are charges, 5 cops being charged with second degree reckless endangerment and cruelty to persons. All have been on administrative leave since last summer. The police chief in the area of Connecticut says you can make mistakes, but you can't treat people poorly, period. You cannot treat people the way Mr. Cox was treated. Well, I guess we'll see when they actually go to trial. The cops have been processed. They turned themselves into a state police barracks on Monday, posted $25,000 bond due back in court December 8th. So it's coming soon. Now, obviously, that's just the next step. God only knows how long the entire process will take. But right now, Cox's family has filed a federal lawsuit against the city of New Haven, as well as the cops, alleging negligence, exceeding the speed limit, and failure to have proper restraints in the police van, or from what we could see in the video, literally any restraints of any kind, just bare metal as someone is being thrown around inside of it. Who could have possibly seen it coming? The injuries might happen. By the way, 4 of the officers filed motions last week claiming qualified immunity from the lawsuit, arguing that their actions in the case did not violate any clearly established legal standard. I'm not a lawyer, I'm not an expert in this area. I don't know if they're right. I do know that if they are right and what they did doesn't violate any clearly established legal standard, that violates clearly established moral and ethical standards for how literally anyone should behave. There had better be consequences for this. There had better be, I mean, financial compensation can only go so far in helping Randy Cox and his family and friends to recover from this horrible incident. But at the very least, there has to be consequences for what they did. Any other thoughts, Conscious?
I know from a political standpoint, that show y'all that if you're watching this, we need to be digging deeply into what qualified immunity is and recognize that whatever state or whatever city or whatever county you're in, how qualified immunity works in your community. Because when we go into the streets and we talking about unarmed people being murdered, or we talking about, you feel me, a police using crazy force, we gotta recognize that if they feel like if they can justify what they did being a part of their job, immunity. Think about that.
Yeah, 100%. Well, consciously, unfortunately, our time is up, but I wanna thank you for joining us. And where can people watch more of your work?
Yeah. The Consciously on all social media platforms, theconsciously.com. If you want you a workshop or facilitation, literally if you go into a social media platform and you don't find the Consciously, hey, reach out to me and let me know. I'm slacking on my Mac and I need to make sure my presence is also felt on that particular platform. Education is elevation, and holla at me, man, holla at me.
Nice, thanks so much. It was great to have you on, have a good one. And for all of you at home, there is more show to come in the aftermath. I'm going to be joined by a reporter from Media Matters. We're going to be talking about Tucker Carlson, trying to figure out what's going on with him and more. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.